So you're a fan of Atlanta United.
And you just can't possibly understand how we finished sixth last year.
Or maybe you just don't get how we conceded 53 goals and you want to know if it's going to happen again.
Was it Parata and Miles Robinson?
Nope. Gone.
Sedic and Josetu?
Nope. Gone.
How about Miguel Berry?
Or maybe it was Pineda's tactics.
Double pivot, airplanes, pinching in. Absolutely shambolic.
I'm Mikey Dobbs.
I'm David Katz.
I'm Carmen Butler.
And we're going to talk about it all, because this is the ATL on Fire podcast show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of ATL on Fire, the podcast where we talk all things Atlanta United football and all things soccer. Dave, Carmen, how are you recovering from St. Paddy's Day weekend?
You go first, Dave.
Oh, that's fine. I'm not Irish, so you
yeah. But, I'm a little too Irish, as you saw at the game. But yeah,
Mikey Dobbs. If you saw him at the supporters' tailgate, he was the Atlanta United leprechaun.
Yeah, yes. I was definitely wearing my DNA.
In many ways. Yeah. In many ways.
Yeah, we had a great time down at the supporters section in the parking lot there yesterday. Pre-game Orlando. We'll talk about the game yesterday, but before we do that, we're going to also recap the New England game. So we have two back-to-back wins, six home goals, and we're back to the fire in the stadium. So some good vibes, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll talk about some of the exciting stuff. We'll talk about some of the things we're still seeing, tactically that we'd like to see change. Some of the things we're seeing maybe improve. But before we do that, Dave, you've been nice enough to, as always, bring us a nice red wine. What are we drinking here?
It's a Chilean Cabernet Conchitoro. It's one of their high-level wines, Marques de Casaconcha Cabernet from the Maipo Valley in Chile. What you think?
That's really nice. It's different from what you've brought in the past. So
very different. This is a pretty high class wine in honor of our really good start.
I like it. Very good.
Like the vibes. Yes. And you had a Manchester United win over the weekend too.
Take that, Liverpool.
Yeah.
Jurgen Klopp in his final season not winning the FA Cup.
Nor
just got to say that.
Are my Wolves either?
No.
Had a total meltdown against Coventry City.
But it was an American who benefited. So
that's what you said.
The Americans scored the game winner against your beloved Wolves. So,
So, in the spirit of spirits, thank our sponsors, Wild Heaven Brewery, two locations, one here in Avondale Estates. Always something going on. New beers. There's usually food up there almost every evening if you want to grab a bite to eat. Often live music. So check out their website for updates or follow them.
And
on Twitter.
Have to say, if you're listening to the podcast and you're not watching the YouTube channel, go check out the YouTube channel right now, because we got this amazing new graphic from Wild Heaven with the beer filling and the soccer. I mean, it is amazing. It makes me want to go there right now.
I definitely want a beer right now.
Yes.
And want to thank Wolf Mountain Vineyards as well. So in the spirits of wine, some great wines. You can also try it out at Wild Heaven Brewery or go up to Dahlonega. Beautiful vineyard. If you're planning your wedding in the spring, or probably you need to plan in the fall.
If you need to drink anything, we've got you covered here on
much.
The ATL on Fire.
Pretty much.
Right? You shouldn't really have to do anything besides Wolf Mountain Vineyards and Wild Heaven beer. I mean, that should have you covered for life.
And Wild Heaven will be opening a new place in Toco Hill soon that has your barbecue
faster,
covered.
Please. Yes.
So
it'll be amazing.
Very cool. All right. So what do we want to get into here? The New England game first?
Sure.
So
4-1 victory.
4-1 victory. But I was able to go with the kids for the first time. So we weren't in our amazing seat, so I had nosebleed seats. But I was a part of the 70,000 people that were there.
You got
maybe not quite 70,000, but it was a pretty packed full house. Great evening. And
I have to apologize. I ruined for those of you who were looking for the podcast last week. I was out of town. That was the reason.
Yeah.
So it's on me, people. I'm sorry.
But yeah, even though I was having trouble focusing on the game with wrangling kids, it did seem like the first 35 minutes, first half, was pretty sluggish in terms of creating any opportunities until we were able to get the PK opportunity at the end of the first half, which changed the tide of things.
Yeah, you know, I've heard some people, including I think maybe yourself, who was like, oh, I'm not sure we played that well, but, you know, 4-1.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
No, and you know, when I went back and watched it on Apple TV, you know, I actually was happier with the way the game got played than what I was observing live, intermittently watching kids. But yeah, it was good.
We'll get to this more as we talk around the league or whatever. But the second goal on the second penalty kick,
right?
What did you think of that call? Right, so it's a cross that goes Silva cross right into his arm from pretty close.
I don't like that call.
They go, it's
not
penalty.
To me, that's not a penalty kick. Like, honestly, I would be furious if it was the other way around. Like, his arm did like a little bit of this, but I mean,
it was in a pretty natural position. It was a little bit out, but
it was in a pretty natural position, and B, it's like one of those ones. It's like point blank range.
Yeah, it was close.
It's only like 10. You know, Silva was right there, and almost like, yeah, you whack it at him because you kind of know that's going to happen half the time. I just feel like it's the wrong spirit of the game.
I have to say, I completely agree with you. Like, I mean, I know it's a penalty for us. Yeah. You know, I love that, but that's a terrible call.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember the first penalty was obviously a penalty.
Yes.
Got played in and Yakimakis got cleared. In fact, it would have probably been a goal anyway, except one of the
referees.
The referees. blew the whistle before it crossed the line.
A little too quick, right? As the ball was going in, you're like, we scored.
And right? I was going to say, this is going to be really awkward if that was missed PK. So
we had two penalties. Now, the other thing about that I was going to bring up, so, and I want your feeling about this, Carmen, maybe you can weigh in first and then Mikey Dobbs.
Okay.
So the first penalty is taken by Almada, who I think is our penalty taker, even though I kind of think GG might be a better penalty taker. Okay. But anyway, when we win the second penalty, you know, a lot of coaches go with the same as their penalty kicker. So it would have been Almada again, but he didn't. He goes with Gigi for the second penalty kick. So how do you feel about that?
I like the switch up, I think. I mean, United did it recently. They had their captain and they had Rashford take it. And I also like just to change it up because I think there's like almost too many head games going on. Yeah. You go the same way, all that type of stuff. Just go and take it.
I'm with you. I like the switch, but it was interesting on the first one.
Yeah.
Evidently, Gigi had the ball, and Almada came and took it from him.
Really?
Yeah.
So we don't actually have a designated penalty kicker.
Which I also like, because if he was the guy who, because you have your designated penalty kicker, like your number one.
Right? Absolutely.
You should.
That
right?
doesn't sound like we did. Because why would Gigi go up and have Greg the ball?
Because he's an assassin. That's what I liked about it. If that's the case, and let's just say it was the fact that Almada's like, no, I'm the guy, and I'm taking the ball from you and scoring.
I'm gonna call you on that. I think that would never happen in a professional team if there is actually the coach has said this is our penalty taker, then I don't think he would do
that. Well, I know also they're in watching the EPL, they say they're doing that a lot in the EPL now. The guy who's not going to take it holds it to the last second. So the goalkeeper does all his homework and starts getting in the frame of mind, like here's how Gigi typically goes left. So I'm already thinking left.
Yep.
And then Almada comes up and the homework on him is he's right. So I don't know, it's the mind games.
I've heard a little bit of that, both in terms of like just trying to keep people from trying to get in that person's head, like just have them in the background, do all your like trash talk, you're going to miss type stuff. And then the actual kicker, let's do it.
I think that's, again, overthinking. Like when we were talking about this too, like sometimes when you have two runners for a free kick and you're like, well, what's going to make a difference? But it just distracts the kicker. Right. And I think the same thing is true in a penalty. If there's somebody else holding the ball or whatever, I think, you know, and you get the ball quite late, you're just getting in the way of your own penalty kicker. I don't think it's actually advantage to the goalkeeper.
No,
that
I
much.
Disagree because these days there's so much like when you have the ball, like people are coming and bumping you and distracting you.
Yeah.
That it's okay when you like the referee's cleared the box at that point and then you hand it to the kicker. They walk up and they have the right amount of time to get their head straight and be decisive.
Yeah.
So I like it.
I disagree with you, but that's okay. But I do 100%. It was like a leading question because I really believe that I do not like it when the same person takes two penalties in one game. If you get a second penalty, yeah. I believe the coach should have a second penalty taker who is designated to take it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Because I agree exactly what you said. As soon as you have that same person, the first one is you go into every penalty, whoever's the designated penalty taker for the team before every game should prep, right? And the coaches should make sure that they've prepped and said, okay, this is what the goalkeeper does. This is what you do. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like you should know all ahead of time. So there's no second guessing it in the game. This is what I'm going to do. Okay. Whether it's going to be wait till the goalkeeper moves and then shoot or whatever it is.
Okay.
Right. But it should be a setup ahead of time for that goalkeeper and that player. As soon as you get to a second one, now it's like, it's not our best thing anymore. Whatever you thought was the best combination for you on that keeper, it's now no longer that. And so I think it takes away the edge.
Yeah.
Now, were y'all the types that always went the same way? Because Dave, Tamara no. told, you're not, weren't, Tamara said you usually went the same way.
Well, to be fair, you know, so I had a favorite one. And, you know, back in the day when there wasn't actually the ability to scout the teams as much, like in college and everything else, yeah. the goalkeeper didn't know. So then, yeah, I typically went the same way all the time. There were some goalkeepers who I had gone against multiple times and I'd taken a penalty against them and I was equally, you know, comfortable going both ways. So
I had a very clear method. I always went the same direction and I went with low power. And just said, hey, all I did is look at the right side netting and just say, I'm going to absolutely smash it right into the side netting and just don't change. Like, and then if you miss, which I may have only missed it like one that I can recall in one of the ADSL games or something like that back in the day. but then, you know, you at least your head was in the right spot and that's
ever missed one be- and I was a penalty kicker for most of my teams and I didn't miss. It was saved.
Okay.
It was a terrific save. Actually, goalkeeper went down and got it in the corner, and I was like,
"Well, what can you do?"
Yeah, I was like, "You know."
All right. So New England game. We get the penalty to end the first half the right way. I think that was in the 45th minute or something like that, wasn't it?
There was one penalty in the first half, and then
Then the second one was the Silva one that we talked about.
Shambolic.
But the next two goals by Giakoumakis were fabulous to get his hat trick. Yeah.
Before we go to that, though, can we go to the clip? I want to point out, so from the highlight package, this was a chance that we gave up. And if we'll set the scene here, right? So New England is attacking down the right side. And for once,
Wiley's out wide on him.
Yes.
And my notes. Yeah.
I wanted to bring this up because if you're a fan of the podcast, you're like, oh, that's what they've been screaming about all the time. They want him here. And then if you're not a fan of the podcast, you would be like, look, it ends up in a disaster, right? Because Wiley gets turned here, right?
He just got beat.
And he gets beat. And I'm going to point out two things about that. So first of all, even after he gets beat, there's so far to go. He's at midfield.
Right.
That he actually basically runs with the guy the whole time. And so it doesn't end up being a disaster. But what I really want to point out about this, in the system that I would like to see, I would like to see Wiley uptight. And I would like to see, in this case, the left of the two center backs a little bit shifted over so that if he does get beat, that's him to come over. And if you watch Williams on this play, I mean, he is like
in no man's
land. Yeah, he's almost like if Wiley can't stay with him, that guy can just run straight to goal.
Yeah.
He's like not reading it at all. So play the clip. So Wiley gets turned.
So he's softening up.
Look at Williams. He's just backing up.
Yeah.
He never goes like he's going to address that at all.
Yep.
And I, you know, one thing I've been noticing a lot about him, you know, of the center back pairing, I feel like Steon is quite aggressive.
Yeah, he's on people's back.
I really like it. But Williams looks like he's afraid and backing up a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you saw it right there. Now, you might say, okay, he shouldn't necessarily go over there early because then he opens everything up behind him. And I'm okay with him taking the time or whatever. But it looked like he was never going to come over. Yeah. Like, you still have to come out eventually, right, to address that. Yeah. Yeah, and so any case. But the other thing about you'll notice about that play is even when Wiley gets turned, he runs with him the entire way, and it's not really a problem.
Yeah, and it was a heck of an effort from that distance too.
Yeah. And what you get as an advantage to this is why we could win that ball, people.
Yeah.
Right. You know, forever forget, you know, this, of course, it doesn't happen on the one time that we actually have it the way we wanted, right? but he could actually win that ball. And if he wins that ball, then we're in a really good spot. Right. So yeah. Anyway. Okay, so now you can go to the goals.
Yeah, the third goal, if my memory serves, is
a great 3:30 in the highlight
pack. Great okay. early cross by Lennon, a little reminiscent of our Gressel days where that ball comes in early. Again, these are the types of goals that we are wanting, Dave, like crosses that have everybody running towards the opponent's goal. Everybody's, you know, it's not a static cross, right? And so this is just a great example of, yeah, Lennon can cross the ball, but they're effective when everybody is pushing into the box. And, you know, this was the case. And of course, Gigi is just, you know, I mean, smashing.
You're stealing my line because, because what I want to point out, I wanted to show this goal and then the goal from the Orlando is sort of back to back. Because so first of all, again, to be, you know, mea culpa for us, or at least more honest about us, we've been a little bit hard at, you know, in seasons past that Lennon is on the outside and he's getting all these crosses. And Pineda would say, you know, he creates the most chances in the league. And we're like, yeah, but we never score off them. Right. And you would say, oh, here's one. Because, yeah. you know, he had all these assists.
Because those crosses are not coming. The ones in the past are not coming from that part of the field.
Yeah, well, okay. So I was just going to say, so first of all, he was getting a lot of assists in season past, mostly off of corner kicks, right? Which I think is a very different thing. We were talking about in live play. This is live play. And what I think Mikey Dobbs is getting at, and what I completely agree about it, is the timing of the run, right? So the timing of the run is such that he is moving into space and he's got his head up and get in front of him. He's not standing there getting it, trying to beat the guy and get a cross off. He's
look at this frame. Look at the frame. You see everybody's number, first off, which means everybody's running that direction. Mm-hmm. And look whose head's up. Lennon. And then you see Giakoumakis backing off a little bit just to make sure he's just slowly times his run and then sprints at the last second. And, you know, that's the 2 seconds that matter here. Boom.
And his ability to deliver a cross is absolutely terrific. We've always said that. Yeah. We're like, if he can actually be timing a run. So Lennon's not fast, right? I mean, he's not slow, but he's not fast. He's not going to run by someone.
Right.
So if he's going to have the ability to get those crosses off, he has to time the run. That's where the airplanes were killing us. They were getting there so early that they could never get that cross off.
And so, again, I didn't see airplanes in this game from Lennon particularly. I think I saw Wiley up a little bit
more. We'll get to that in a second. Okay. Can we go to the second example of this? So in the Orlando game at 5:03 in the highlights package, right, is the second goal that is, again, Lennon to Gigi. Right, which is the second goal in this game.
You're asking a lot of me here.
You got to go to a new tab at the top.
Oh
there.
My! Look, I'm messing up everything. Hold on, guys. I'll right. keep talking. Talk yeah, amongst yeah. yourselves.
So in this case, you know, if y'all recall, right? So in the end of the play, Lennon ends up dropping it to the top of the box, and Gigi side foots it upper 90, yeah. like unbelievable. And this again is a sort of a goal out of nothing that Gigi just amazing. But my point in that actual play, what I want to point out again, is that Lennon is back further at the beginning of that play.
Yeah.
And the timing of his run is such that he is running into space.
He runs into space. He runs into almost the end line or, you know, in deep into the box. And boy, what a nice layoff.
Yes. And Lennon not only can cross, but he makes good decisions.
Yeah, he made a great decision.
So if he's in space there and he's got runners, he's making choices.
I mean, everything was in that finish, but man, he put it on a plate for him. Mm-hmm. For sure.
I also want to say is that, you know, years past when we've been criticizing the Lennon crossing thing and how he's creating all these dangerous chances. And we said, you know, that was a team when we had Moreno and we had Araujo and whatever. Nobody was in the box. Right. This is a totally different story because Gigi is made to go get
Miguel
those.
Barry definitely wasn't.
Oh, my gosh.
Miguel.
Okay.
So it's at 5:03.
5:03. Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah. All right. You got it?
So right. Look about right. Okay. Let's play this.
So watch Lennon in this clip. Right. That he is not all the way up there and he's going to be coming running onto the ball.
Did I break it?
No. Oh, there we go. It's just maybe my internet. Oh.
And we're going to have to go back.
Oh, yeah.
I think they'll show it again in a second on the second.
We'll show a little more of the buildup, but yeah,
there's the finish.
What a goal.
But when it comes back around again, watch Lennon on this. He is in full stride. He gets a beautiful ball from Saba. He's underlapped in this case and goes out to the outside from the inside. Here's the run, right? There he goes, right? Yeah. And so he receives it fully running. He's not all the way up there, right? And this is what I've been talking about all season, and maybe I'll go to the tactical board right now, because one of the things that's so important to Atlanta United is the flowing that everybody is attacking together.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about it, not just about Lennon, but I want to talk about it in the context of what you're about to say, which is the back three.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about it in the context of Saba and Silva.
Okay. Tactical board.
Tactical board.
Sorry about that, folks.
A technical difficulty. I think we're still streaming, though.
Yeah.
Dave just unplugged the power to the roadcaster.
I almost killed the whole podcast.
Going to the tactical board.
Well, you know, sometimes the tactics get a little aggressive.
I know.
I mean, you know.
That was awesome. All right. So
great recovery.
Yeah, great. That was pretty strong recovery.
Well done.
First time we've ever lost power in the middle of the podcast. Okay. All right. So what I want to talk about. So first of all, I guess let's talk about what you were about to get at, right? So when we're attacking, for the most part, Lennon has been forward and he's been kind of underlapping here. And then what we've looked like mostly in the back is this, three in the back instead of two. It's been Wiley, Williams, and Steon,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So I like that because, we had two in the back in the previous times, and that is just crazy shambolic. Now, what I was talking to Carmen about earlier is, why does it have to be, it's almost all Lennon now, and Wiley is going forward pretty rarely. Yeah. Why can't they be trusted to make decisions about when to go all the time? I have a theory, but I want to hear yours first, Mikey Dobbs.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, as some of my observation, Lennon's been holding back quite a bit too, though. Like, I've seen him slowly move up and in on the in overlap.
He hasn't been as aggressive getting up there. I agree.
But he is slow walking it into the...
And that's what we were just talking about in the clip. If he's not... So if he is here, people, then he gets the ball coming back to our own goal, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if he is just 10 yards behind like this, now he gets the ball running into space like you saw on that on the goal we just showed you when he crossed it, right?
Yeah, and you can he and Saba have a better understanding of who's staying and who's going.
Yep.
Whereas back when the Araujo days, Araujo was already up there, and then Lennon just pushed up there, and it was...
Yeah, they were holding hands.
Holding hands.
All right.
So that's a nice plus, right? I think we've observed, right, that there's less... our backs seem to be staying back more, which I've tweeted a million times, or at least one of them in this formation, right?
Yeah.
But you're observing that you feel like Wiley's not going up in...
It's mostly disjointed. It's almost all Lennon going forward. And I think the reason is this. So what Almada likes to do is drift out here.
Right.
And I think that what's happening is Pineda thinks that if Wiley goes forward, he's just running into Almada space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like...
I think that's right. I think you're right on that.
I'm like, come on. Almada can find another space. He is a good enough player. He doesn't always have to go to the same space.
Right.
Right? I mean, you know, if Wiley were up, like, made...
But isn't what Almada's doing there dictating who stays and goes then? If he prefers drifting to the left and that's all he's doing...
I don't know. I mean, we don't know what they're telling, but it seems like Wiley is sort of... Wiley, every time we start to go forward, he gets sort of mostly in this back three. The only time I've seen him go forward really is sort of when he wins the ball. Occasionally, he'll keep going now. But I think he's been designated as you got to be back in one of the three. And yeah. My problem with that is you're losing a whole thing, a whole dynamic. Wiley is a terrific player going forward and you're losing that.
Yeah.
And now we can score goals. So maybe we don't need it, but we could still have it. Yeah. And he doesn't, you know, again, why can't we trust these guys that when Wiley goes forward, right? Let's say he does this. So Wiley goes outside, right? And let's say now Lennon, why can't we trust Lennon to read that and stay back? We get the same three across the back as we normally have. And now Almada can go seek out a different space.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're right. And I think a lot of that might be just where Almada's tending to drift, which is seemingly in the outside left. You're not seeing attack from the right side at all, in my memory, at least this year.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Almada has been really on the left a lot. And
that's
I want him in a much more free licensing role, because again, if he starts to do that all the time, then they're going to be able to to tactically, mark it up.
Especially in the Orlando game, which I think myself and a lot of people felt like Almada was not very present in the game last night.
Didn't seem like it. Didn't hear his name a lot.
Yeah. And yeah, I felt like that was, probably, and maybe a missed opportunity for him to mix it up, figure out different ways to angle into the game. Maybe they had him really well marked up and drifting into that space. I don't know what the issue was. Dave, did you have any observation on why we didn't see much creativity from Almada last night?
Well, there was one clip that wasn't in the highlight package that I noted during the game.
I guess he did attack the goal that he missed, right? Was from the right side.
And we're going to get to, we can show that in a second. We'll get to that clip, I think, after this. But what I would say is that there was a ball that we played out, and it was an outlet ball, and Almada was basically out here. And I don't know, I guess Silva was maybe back here or something. I'm not really sure. But anyway, they played it to Almada, and it was a little further up. It was sort of like here. It was a pretty long ball, and they had a guy like that.
Yeah.
Orlando did. So I think that they were ready for that. And he tried to make a touch under tremendous amount of pressure and lost the ball.
Yeah.
And I think that is what's going to happen if he becomes predictable.
Right.
Because Almada is really good once he gets on the ball, but he's not the biggest physical guy. He's not you don't want him battling for a 50-50 ball and a long ball. You just don't want that.
Right. You want him to get it turned, have time, and then put people on their heels.
Right. Okay. So that's one thing. Okay. The other thing that we keep talking about is tactically in the back, right? What should Saba and Silva do? And I don't want to go through all of it. We've been through a lot about the pinching in, even on the previous things. But clearly, when we're really pinched in, the expectation is that, Silva's going to track in behind out here, which I think is absolutely nuts. What I was going to say, though, is that, I don't know if Silva and Saba should be tracking back behind our backs, but I do like them tracking back into these gaps. Sorry. I like them being back here or here because, again, when we're there, the moment the ball turns over here, now they're running into space. Because in previous seasons, when they weren't tracking back here, they were like every time we would win the ball, we would have Silva, Gigi, Saba, like even a lot last year, and they would be like that.
Yeah.
Well, and so then we're playing to them again, coming back towards our own goal.
I'm pretty sure if you go to that clip of the Orlando game, Dave, where Saba releases the ball, that's exactly what happened. Almada was up, Gigi was up, but Almada was particularly up into the release space. Saba got it in that space and just played the long ball.
So it was all the way back here. Saba gets the ball actually sort of in here. And actually, in that case, Almada was here and made the run over here.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I love that, So that I think is incredible. My point being that I really like Saba and Silva to come back into these gaps. I just don't like them actually tracking in behind our outside backs. I would much rather have our outside back, Wiley, actually go and address this.
Yeah.
Right? And then even if that means, Muyumba or Silva have to come in and help, like if Williams has to step out, we can have that tracking back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I want. Because a lot of times I'm seeing Moyamba and he's present in the midfield, but he's not marked up, right? And so in that case, if Wiley goes wide, then all of those things become more obvious to a player like Moyamba, who's got to get back in the center and or in the gaps there.
We have had a lot of this where Moyamba and Sleaze have been in front of the back four, kind of like this, whenever we have all four back. You know, Saba's been more kind of caught up here, yeah, whatever, but they've been back here and they have been reluctant to. So even if the guy, even if the guy runs by him and overloads it, they haven't been tracking that run. They actually are expecting this to get picked up, which is why they feel like Wiley has to be here, yeah, and Silva has to be out here.
And it's no one, and it's people are caught in limbo.
Yeah, I agree with you, because Saba's not doing a good job, right? You know, that's how we gave up, we shot the goal in Columbus. We gave it because everybody said Saba didn't track. But again, you're asking Saba to track in behind Lennon. It's nuts.
Yeah, 50 yards. He was in the basically near half field inside the center circle.
Whereas if Sleaze in particular, so again, we're playing this dreaded double pivot, and I think it's working much better. So first of all, I would say we have at least now guys in the midfield. And Sleaze and Moyamba have been worlds better than Josetu and Sadic and even Ibarra, right? I mean, we are much better in the midfield. So, and that has meant, as we're going to show in a minute, we've turned the ball over a few times. And when we turn the ball over, we're getting counter opportunities. When we get counter opportunities, like that first one where we got Saba one-on-one in this last game, I mean,
forget. And boy, Sleaze, he pushes up on people too and reads the game really well. He's he is showing that he's been a good pickup.
But I would rather have them play a little bit forward back, right? And have Sleaze go ball side a little bit, right? In here. And then Moyamba try to go weak side. And that would mean that if this guy does make, if their player here does make this run out of midfield, right? We can still track that. So Wiley can be out here. Silva doesn't have to do it, right? He can actually track that with Sleaze, right? And that way we don't get overloaded, right? So Moyamba is supposed to be here, right? So we don't get overloaded again, right? Because they have now, you know, in this particular case, Dion is marking Gill, right? Williams is marking Veroni. And now the runner out of midfield, you know, Sleaze is actually tracking.
Yeah.
Even if Sleaze has to track in behind Wiley, that's okay, because when we win the ball, right, we're not trying to look to outlet to Sleaze.
Right.
Right? Okay. Because here, now if we win the ball, right, if Sleaze wins the ball or Wiley wins the ball, now we have a beautiful outlet to Silva.
Yeah.
Right? He's there for the outlet, which is what you want. So I don't love the double pivot for Moyamba and Sleaze. I think Sleaze is much better tactically disciplined. I think already we can see that, and I think he has a tendency to stay at home a little bit more. So I would love to see him get the freedom to really do that, and then Moyamba play off of him.
Yeah, right? I like that.
That's what I would have. I wouldn't play them side to side, because when you play the double pivot, you're really saying I have got two guys with the same sort of attributes. They can both defend and both go forward.
Which is definitely not the case with Moyamba and Sleaze.
Yeah, because they both can go forward and they both can defend, but Sleaze looks much more tactically disciplined and reading the game than Moyamba.
Yeah.
Moyamba's all action.
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, that's the tactical board.
I like it. Tactical. Sorry for the power outage. Watch your feet, people.
Let's see if we can do this.
Sorry for the outage. Hopefully we're still live. and I think we are. We just lost. We probably just lost our audio there for a hot second. I don't know if it picked back up on the feed or not. We'll find out when you switch back to that. Oh.
Oh, shit.
Device just got it. Okay.
People could still hear all that. We'll see.
I don't know about that. Yeah, we got zero listeners still. Let's see if the mic is working.
This mic is working.
No, on the, like, it should show. I don't know where that is, whether it'll show audio or not. Oh, click the settings, the gear in the center there. Now the gear. Oh. Check. No, settings. Yeah. Click that. And audio. Yeah, Check, check. I don't know. I don't see it moving. I don't think our YouTube is working.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Well.
All that good tactical board.
You know, this kind of reminds me of how my pork butt went. It caught on fire. Don't use butcher paper is my advice for your. But at least we've
Do
got audio.
Do
you
want to try stopping the live and restarting the live? Would that help or no?
I don't know at this point. I feel like the broadcast is still going, though. So,
all right.
Yeah. I don't know. You guys keep going. Keep talking. I'm going to see if it is on my phone. No.
Okay. All right. Mikey Dallas is going to become a listener for a second. All right. So, Carmen, I was going to talk about in the Orlando highlights at 228 in the highlight package. Okay, so what happens here is just to set the stage for you all. Let's move that over.
Yeah. Wrong one. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think we've got audio on that.
So no audio?
Yeah, maybe end the broadcast and try to do it again. Okay. But
I'm going to try to come back to live, people. Those of you listening onto the podcast afterwards, you have to bear with us a little bit as we try to get the live listeners back.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The producer had a very long St. Patty's Day weekend. I apologize. I apologize.
Yeah. Maybe, Mikey Dobbs, you want to talk while before we're getting back to these highlights about our trip to the supporters section before the game.
Yeah, that was it was fantastic. Everybody's so friendly down there. Like, that was it was great to have people enthusiastic about at least giving an attempt to listen to the podcast. I really appreciate all the good vibes down there. And, yeah, hopefully we got some new listeners. We gave away some beer openers. We had some good swag. In fact, we gave away a jersey.
We did, to a
listener of the podcast. So, and we've got more. So
we've got more. Courtesy of Atlanta United gave those to us.
So yeah, let's figure out a way. Yeah, to get down to the supporters section again. It's a good way to walk into the game. So
it was hopping, as you could hear from that audio. Yeah. That was really really good. All right, let's go back to this tactical moment, Carmen.
Okay.
So just to set the scene, right? So we are defending, right? This is a classic thing, right? So Silva and Muyamba are actually chasing on the right side. You can see our classic back three, right? So it's actually that must be, I think, Wiley and –
What's going on? Oh, that's me.
That's you. That's you. Sorry. I'm like, what are you doing?
I messed it up. Sorry.
Sorry about that.
All right. So anyway, we have our back three, which in this case actually looks like Lennon and Stian and Williams. But in any case, what I wanted to point out about this clip is Sleaze, right, who's right there in the middle of the picture. He's like the most central guy in there. And what he is going to do, which we did not have any of with Josetu, is he's going to naturally come over and protect the back four as a defensive midfielder should have. And what will happen here is Williams is going to win the tackle, but it's Sleaze closing it down that allows Williams to win the tackle, and away we go on the counter. So play the clip. So there comes Sleaze. We win there. Oops, sorry. And then boom.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the one you were talking about, Almada running it out. So Williams wins the ball, and the tackle goes right to Saba, who outlets to Almada. And that was about as fast as you can possibly go. This is what we've been talking about. If you actually have it marked up, which we did, and you have a defensive midfielder who's reading the game, and you can turn them over and get it out to one-on-one with our best players. I mean, in this case, Almada should have scored because he basically has a breakaway, and he doesn't.
I think as you were pointing out, he kind of stumbles as he cuts it back here. Otherwise, he just puts that in the corner. But any case, you know, that's the way it's supposed to look.
Yeah. Yeah, he just didn't look confident in the game.
No, he didn't at all. But I was going to say is that, you know, that is what happens when you have it, when you're pressed up, when you have a defensive midfielder covering in front of it, you get the turnover and away you go. It's just recycling the ball to your best players.
Yeah.
Right? That's what we've been looking for the whole time. So
do we want to go to the last goal in the New England game? Because it was sure. it was a cracker. Not the last one, because that was actually New England, which I was leaving the stadium. First time I've ever left a game early. Yeah.
But
we had kids. And kids. It was a smart decision because MARTA was a disaster and we got on the first train. So
yes, yeah, so you want to set it up for them?
No regrets. I didn't get to see the score against us.
So it's yet. At 4:43 in the highlight package.
So yeah, somebody does something and it deflects and then somebody chips it back to Almada.
Yeah, so actually Gigi tries to actually score or cross or maybe both. I think he was shooting, but it goes across. Anyway, and it ends up not going out of bounds and then Saba actually recycles it and it ends up back over off a slight deflection back to Gigi for a second try and...
Yeah, he outside of his left foot on purpose, which you can clearly see, and like, that's where he was going, and just upper 90 side netting of far post. It was magical.
You stole my thunder again, because I was going to say, I mean, left-footed. If you're a striker out there, I mean, obviously Gigi's a right-footed guy, and he hits this with the outside of his left foot. Ooh. I mean, that's technical.
I haven't seen it.
Play the clip. Okay.
You can see it from behind. He meant to do this, which made it even more impressive.
It's got a candidate for the goal of the year.
Yeah.
I have not seen this. Let's see. Ooh!
Just stand there and take your applause. Gigi.
That's the when you don't have any pressure, it's 3-0 and you're going for your hat trick. You're like, why not?
Right? Why not bend it with my weak foot
right
all over the far corner? And you're going to see it again. So Gigi, I think, is shooting right here in the first one when he gets the back heel. I think this is a shot. I don't know, whatever.
Like, Let me try again.
But it gets recycled back, deflects it back to him. He's like, oh, a second chance, and boom.
Oh, that's so lovely. God, let me just watch that one more time. I'm sorry.
Yeah. They have a cool view of this from like a camera up in the ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty neat replay. I'm sure you can find it online.
Okay, so a hat trick for Gigi.
Yeah.
So obviously, we don't score in our away game, and maybe now's a good time to talk about it, right? So two phenomenal results at home, 4-1 against New England. And New England was a good team last year. They fell apart a little bit at the end after Bruce Arena got sacked.
Yes.
But, you know, he got sacked for all of his whatever comments, and then they fell apart. But they still made the playoffs or whatever. And by the time Bruce Arena got sacked, they were, like, doing pretty well. Anyway, and now their coach is Caleb Porter, who is – won the MLS Cup with two different teams, with Portland and now with Columbus, trying for a third team. So, you know,
should be a good team by all accounts. Good coach,
they're a little bit in turnover land, you know, I mean, in terms of, you know, the roster and things like this. So maybe not their year yet, but they're still going to be a good, decent team. So that's a good result, I think.
Yeah.
And then obviously, Orlando, most people expect to be towards the top of the league. They have a terrific coach. They have a good roster, and we handled them easily at home, 2-0. So, two great results. Now, but.
Wait. Can we live in positivity just for a little bit? Just half a second. Just
I'm staying positive.
You're going to stay positive?
Yeah, stay positive. What? I was just going to say, so we lose at Columbus, which is no big deal. They're the best team in the MLS, right? And we only lost 1-0. It was a tight game. We didn't really produce anything offensively. So, the question going forward is, is that just Columbus, who happens to be an amazing team, or are we still a formula team on the road? What's your thoughts?
Well, I think we're a formula team to some degree altogether.
Until we prove otherwise.
But no, it's still kind of that pinching that we're talking about. And teams, I do think, see that and play it out wide because they know that those spaces are there and build on us in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of the formula, I think other teams have. And I still just never have understood why on the road is such a disadvantage. It's and it's in all sports, but particularly like
big in the MLS.
Big in the MLS. So yeah,
it's one of the hardest leagues in the whole world to win on the road.
Yeah. It just seems so strange, right? It's just like, all right, it's still the game of soccer on a field.
Most people would say it's because the country's so big and the travel distance is so far.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. These are, I mean, I felt like getting some sleep wasn't that big of a deal. But there's obviously something to it. It just doesn't, it's just always surprising.
It is a fact. What's causing it, I don't know, but it is a fact that that's actually happening.
I don't know. Do you think we're like we follow a certain pattern on the road that's different than how we play at home tactically?
I think, you know, so we felt like last year there were sort of 2 to 3 major problems that kept us back. So first of all, it was all about the goals we gave up. We scored plenty of goals. We just kept talking about how we gave up 50, 55 goals or whatever it was, right? And that was a killer, right? And I would say we thought that was for several reasons. One, all the stupid pinching in. Two, the airplanes or whatever. And then three, the fact that our midfield was just defensively shambolic, right? Yeah. So and then maybe even 4, occasionally we had 2 players back. So if you look at it, we've actually solved most of those problems. The midfield's way better, Muyamba and Sleaze. We have defense. We never have what we had last year, which is sometimes we get counterattacked and there'd be nobody in the midfield. Yeah. We don't have that. Second of all, we don't have airplanes, so we always have 3 in the back. Yeah. And the only one we're really still doing is the pinching.
Pinching thing.
Yeah.
And to be fair, we have 2 solid goalkeepers. I haven't seen Cohen play, but by all accounts.
Yeah, we also thought the goalkeeping cost us probably 3 goals or so during the whole year.
And I think it will if it's still Brad. I mean, you can even see he's just that half a second slower. Just
getting But up. I would say the midfield and never leaving 2 in the back is potentially good enough to get us to mediocre.
Yeah.
If we're mediocre defensively, we're a contender.
Yeah, we're certainly, we've only let in 2 goals in 3 games. That's, I mean,
it's way better.
If we can stick on that track, then we're fine, right?
Well, that's just what, that's what I was wondering. So my early reading of it is I might have said we've upped the formula a little bit, and maybe the formula, like, so the formula last year would have said on the road, a good team, we lose. A mediocre team, we lose or best tie. And the only chance we had at all on the road was the really, really weakest teams.
Yeah.
Right? And I would say, you might say now we're a contender to win a few and maybe get some more ties against the middle thing. We're still going to lose on the road to the best teams because we still have a little bit of problems like that, the pinching in and stuff. But I would upgrade us.
Yay. That is positive. Okay. Yes.
But we have a road game coming up. Who are we playing next?
Maybe Carmen can pull up our schedule.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm blanking on it.
All of us.
So we have a road game. Then we come back and it's Easter Sunday that we have a game, which no one's going to go to.
Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto.
Toronto on Saturday on the road. So what you would say? So Toronto has gotten off to a better start this year. Right? Maybe you pull up the table, right, Carmen? Mm-hmm. So Toronto was woeful last year, right? But the Italian guy, what name right in my head, has had a terrific start to the season. And Toronto has looked much better, right? They're 2-1-1 to start out. So, you know, I would have said Toronto at the moment kind of looks like one of the middle teams. Maybe could end up being one of the better of the middle teams, right? Historically, last year, that would be a loss.
Yeah.
Right. So the question is, do you think we can go to Toronto and get a tie or even a win?
I don't.
Oh. Really?
See, the pessimist.
Darn it. And why? And why, Mikey Tops?
Well, I think we're going to be missing some players, if I'm not mistaken.
Are we?
I think Yakimaki's...
No, Gigi already, because he's already been called up by Greece.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's...
He has scored 4 of the Gigi, 4 of the 6 goals.
Yeah. Bartosz Sleaze is going to be gone. Silva is gone. I think, all of them are on international duty.
Next week already?
Yeah. Aww, I think Bartosz is getting pulled in for the qualifiers as well. So that's it, right?
Okay.
Now what do you think?
No.
I'm not just being pessimistic to be pessimistic.
You're being realistic. Being realistic at this point. Yeah.
You brought up, I wasn't thinking about that.
I didn't know it was
I was still trying to get us into an actual philosophical
team. I'm not the one whose brain should be firing right now.
Well, I
had a lot of Guinness over the weekend.
Well, I have to say, we talked about this all the time, and the reason why we predicted in overall that we wouldn't really be that much better than we were last year is not because we've clearly upgraded the team, but that we're going to have a lot of games where we're not going to have our full team.
Yeah.
It's a big problem. But that's the great thing about MLS Cup, right, is as long as at the end of the season we make it and we are hopefully get some home field advantage, that's really what we need.
That's the important part.
That's the important part. So we need to be...
You got to be top four.
Got to be top four.
If you're not top four, you're probably not winning the MLS title.
So but we've got to figure out a way to do that. Yeah.
It's going to be real tough
with everyone
because the teams
missing.
Are really good. Miami is killing it, right? They won even without Messi. They were tied and they brought on Suarez and then he scored two goals. Yeah. Cincinnati is looking like Cincinnati. So Columbus is looking like the best team in the MLS.
Is Giacomarquis he's tied with Suarez right now in goals?
I don't know.
Four goals apiece?
He's got four goals. Yeah. I don't know what. I think Suarez has four. Is that the lead?
I think so. And Suarez has two games in hand on Gigi. So.
Yeah, they've played five. We've only played three. Yeah. So we were the one to get the early bye, which sucks because nobody wants a bye after the first week. But anyway, that's why we've only played three games and everybody else has played four and Miami's played five. So, you know.
Yeah.
What
do we got? Giacomarquis four, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, tied with
Suarez
and
four.
Jokovic.
Yeah. Wow. Almada is not on the assist board.
Not yet.
Now, did he look strong in the New England game? I didn't really watch that one all the way through. He did look really strong. Okay.
I mean, he again was making great passes. Okay. How about that cross, though, from Gigi with the outside of his foot?
Oh.
The Spring Saba?
The Spring Saba.
Good Lord.
Another. That was his right outside of the foot.
Anybody thinks that guy's just a finisher, watch that.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. Classy.
Yeah. Just having a flashback of that that's worth calling out.
The only other thing I was going to point out about these games, I don't know what you have more, but two things. One, in the first game, I noticed that the goal that we gave up, and maybe you can pull it up, actually, in the first set of highlights at 5:58. This is after you left the stadium, Mikey Dobbs, so you would have noticed about this. But one of the things I would like about this, I would forget the goal, right? You know, we gave up the goal, who cares, whatever. But,
did you say 4:58?
5:58.
I did go back and look at it. It looked like, I only quickly looked at the replay, it looked like a hell of a shot, though. Like
it's a hell of a shot.
He was marked up, and the guy just hit a cracker with his left foot. Upper 90. It was a pretty good shot.
Yes.
Okay. New England game, right?
Yep.
Let's do it.
So I want you to hit play and then pause a few seconds later. Ready? Play. Pause. Okay.
Okay.
What do you see about our marker in the
zone,
box?
Zone, 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 and zone. There's one guy that's like able to put any sort of elbow grease on.
One guy who might be marking, and he's probably just in the zone and happens to be next to a guy.
This is atrocious. Oh my gosh.
Atrocious even for
one of the things I really liked about this is because
you got a positive here.
No, I'm not positive. What I liked about this shot. Yeah. I think it's shambolic too.
Yeah.
But what I liked about this shot is New England happened to play a short corner with two guys on the outside, and they all rushed in at a timed run. And because of that, you can really see what we're playing defensively. Because sometimes it's hard to see whether you're man marking or zone because there's a lot of guys in around. And you're like, is he man marking? Is he zone? You can tell what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's not a New England player inside the penalty spot, basically. And every one of our players is zoned in the penalty spot and they're perfectly chess pieces.
I think this is, and now I understand why you are an opinion. You don't like pure zone on corners. No. And this is the perfect example because, A, if he does cross it, you got four guys running full speed, likely, into the box who can put.
Who's got who?
Who's got who?
You
got,
like Hollywood, where'd he go? Yeah. Right?
So there's no accountability, and they're already at a loss because their guys are running at them, and so they have to time it right at the last second.
There's no ability to body a guy up here, so they have a free run, And again, they can run two guys at one zonal marker. Yeah. And I actually think this looks like classic Caleb Porter, right? That they know that we're potentially zoning. And they, one of the things I would say, what I'm in favor, just for the record, of having a couple of zonal guys and then the rest man marking. So a mixture.
Yeah.
Not perfect zone, not perfect man to man, a mixture. And there, I think there's a lot of flexibility that will work within that, depending on who you have and whatever. But this is clearly a straight zone. And one of the things I would say about New England is the thing about a zone that I have noticed over the years that is really the biggest problem. Sometimes, a lot of times you have guys enough in the areas where you can win the first ball. But as soon as you win the first ball, if it doesn't get cleared, if it gets skipped or it bounces around, there's no accountability and almost always they score on the second ball. So here, Caleb Porter, or whoever New England is designing it, has decided to go short. And by going short, you almost create that extra, like, secondary moment.
Right.
Which is kind of, I never thought about that on a zone. Maybe the best play to beat a zone is actually to always play short, cause them to do something, whatever, and then crash like they're doing here. I think it's beautifully executed.
So let's watch it go. Yeah, so then just... But he does a nice job here. I mean, he gets pressure right away, and what a goal.
That is
a, right? That is a hell of a goal.
That is a nice goal.
Yeah, right. You can't really fault anybody defensive-wise on the goal. I wasn't pointing that out. I wasn't trying to make that point. But I wanted to make the point, if we're figuring out what we're playing, that's what we're playing, people.
But yeah, Pineda clearly told him to play zone defense in that situation.
Or whoever. He says he always assistant coach just get to design the free kicks. Yeah.
I'm like, okay. That's like a head coach at the end of the day. He's calling the plays.
Yeah, man. I think you're ultimately responsible.
NFL, like, ultimately responsible. If the offensive coordinator goes in shotgun, let's just say during the Super Bowl, when you have the whole damn thing won, somebody needs to be able to veto that. Okay. Whether it's Matt Ryan or I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter.
Too soon. Still too soon.
I know.
All right. And so then the last thing I'll say, keeping us on track, is... From a real negative, I think that zonal marking is shambolic, to a real positive in the second game, right? The substitutions. So the first game, we're up 4-0. So, yeah. You know, the substitutions probably don't really matter that much. But in this game where it was 1-0 pretty late into it, you got to see what the strategy is. So I'll just go through it. First, he brings Fortune on for Silva.
And you like that.
Yeah, I'll get to it in a second. Then the second sub is Abram for Muyumba, and he went to 3 as the center backs, right? And then I guess those are the big ones that I really want to talk about. There is a third sub, but anyway, the third sub was quite late and doesn't matter.
That's my opinion. Let's shut it down. It's 2-0 at this point, right?
Yep, I love the first sub.
You take off all action Moyamba as well and put in a third center
and
back.
And for once, I mean, it's late in the game and he's killing off the game, but for once you would say we have two truly defensive midfielders on the field, which I've never understood why we can't do that sometimes, for example, Gregerson from the start Brown, on the road.
So
No, two defensive midfielders. Oh. It's Fortune and Sleaze.
Fortune and Sleaze, but also now we've got Gregerson and Abram, who Abram came, so it's Abram, Williams, and Gregerson in our back three?
So, yeah, he went with Abram and Williams and Gregerson in the back three after he brought off Muyumba.
Yeah.
Right. But here's the thing.
So what don't you like about that? Because it did result in our first clean sheet ever.
Yes, because you were determined. You said they were going to score.
I thought they were going to score,
and they did not. So that's good.
So there's two things that I thought were crazy. So first of all, I don't like it because what you did is you the previous sub created actually a really good defensive center midfield, right? Where we had a really extra defensive, because at that point we had Fortune, Muyumba, and Sleaze all in the game together in the center midfield. That is a really defensive center midfield. Mm-hmm. So I love that because honestly, when we have a lead, if you get those guys and you can turn it over, because they're going to be pushing up, you get Gigi or Almada or Saba, whoever's left on the field, one-on-one, they'll still score. Yeah. So I love that. I love that, love that, love that. And I would not have thought Pineda would have done it because he's so like, you can't have all those defensive players on the field. And he kind of showed it because he only let it be on the field for like 6 minutes before he changed it. So he immediately brought off Muyumba. And when he brought off Muyumba, he brought on the third center back. And I'm like, My problem with that is you just lost that awesome advantage you had in the center midfield to create another back. We didn't need it. There was nothing that said that our center backs needed it, right? And you also then, by playing three in the center, you get this who's marking who.
Yeah.
And I kid you not, Mikey Dubs. We're playing three center backs, okay? So if you would say if that was our starting system, three center backs, Lennon and Wiley going forward, whatever. They weren't really it was
Wiley, same back.
Late in the game. Yeah. They were still pinching in. We had three center backs holding hands.
Yeah.
I was like, the whole point of having three center backs is now Wiley and Lennon have really good protection and you can afford to be aggressive out there where you can win that ball.
Yeah.
We still didn't have it. They were just freaking holding hands.
So and also you're changing formations late in the game, which changes the whole way the team's been playing the entire game. So I get what you're saying there.
So I would have said, love the first sub because you get the three defensive midfielders on all at the same time. And then you just leave them up top. And if you want to late on, then bring on a like for like a Wolf for Saba. So there's extra energy up there. Great. No problem. Or a Mascara because you use that pace later. I mean, love that. I know he's just coming back. So whatever. But I love when you have a lead. Us putting those three guys together in the midfield, also because you can afford to not have that extra attacker, we're still going to score.
So, back to the prediction on the Toronto game. Do you think we can win or even tie without Giakoumakis and Bartosz Slys?
No.
So, okay, you're going with a loss.
Yeah, because I would say that, so Slys has been the huge, you know, we said it from the very beginning of the preseason, and we hadn't seen Slys yet. So we said, all right, if this team is going to be great, it's because Slys is a super upgrade, and we finally have a defensive midfielder. Check. And so far, that's been yes.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that, in and of itself, has been the biggest difference in the team.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Gregerson looks pretty solid, too.
I think Gregerson's been terrific. I think Williams, people are talking about being great. I don't think he's great, but whatever. Yeah. So,
but he's at least service. Like he's not like, I don't know. Like he's not the, I mean, he's definitely one of our weakest links, but he's not a problem.
I agree.
Yeah.
He's fine.
Yeah.
But my problem is you're now not going to have the defensive midfielder that you have in Slys. And I think he's been just killing it for us in the midfield. I don't think Muyamba can take his role. I don't think DeFortune can take his role. And then on top of that, without Gigi, right? Where's the fulcrum, right?
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so the question is, what will he do without Gigi? And I'll tell you the answer that he's going to do, and I'll tell you what I would do differently.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Carmen, you were going to say something?
No, go ahead.
I think it's going to be
Tiare
is going to come in. Because that's, I mean, if he's going to play Miguel Berry, sure as hell going to give that guy some minutes to wait and see how many red cards he can get this season and be like, that's probably a bad idea. Versus what he should do, right? Which is something more creative, which he's not going to do, right? So I think that's where you're going here. Yeah. So I think we both agree it's going to be, but it'll
it's
also
going to be Tiare.
It'll also be a moment to finally figure out whether our theory is correct on him or not.
I think Tiare actually looks like he has some raw talents. And really, he's fast, he's strong, he's pacey. So, you know, maybe he turns out to be terrific as a backup striker. But to me, he doesn't look like our best off-the-bench offensive weapon. I would have said Wolf or Mascara. Mascara, I think, would be, at the end of the season, was really good. But Wolf was also really good. Okay. I would be bringing off Wolf off the bench like every game the last 20 minutes. Yeah. That would be his role on this team, and he scored tons of goals. Yeah. Mascara, I think, could be a starter. He's pacey. He can bring it. So I would have said Mascara down the right. Saba moves to the left because who cares? He's two-footed. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And Silva plays the fulcrum of the striker.
Oh, I like that. Because Silva's you know, strong enough to play the nine.
Holds the ball up well.
Holds the ball up well. Great foot skills. Mm-hmm. Not always the best decision making.
Yep.
But
looks like he could finish in the box.
Yeah, and he's 50-50. Like sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, that guy just put on a clinic. Other times you're like, why is he doing that? Like, but I'll take that. Yep. I'll take that. Especially at the number nine, he's not risking anything other than trying to get us a goal on the road. Yep. So I like that formula.
Alternatively, what's going to happen? We're going to get killed, run over in the midfield. Tiare is going to get red carded, especially as we'll talk about now with the new referees.
referees. Excuse me?
Well, we've been playing the whole season with the replacement referees, right?
Really?
There's a blue card up there. See that above your head?
Oh, I do see the blue card.
Do you think that's ever going to happen? Please tell me it won't.
No.
Okay, good. I don't think it's gonna happen. But they're testing it out, right? Yeah. So what's the theory behind this blue card concept?
Well, can we first talk about... I mean, I don't know. I don't really know. I'm not a big proponent of the blue card, right? But in any case, what I was going to say is that the big thing is that starting out the year, the MLS referees have been on strike, right? So we have had replacement referees the whole time. They're all college referees who are filling in. We commented in our first podcast after the first week how nobody really talked about the referees, and that was good. That has not held up.
Yeah.
Right. In this, I don't know if you watched some of the highlights of this last week, but you want to go through them. So first of all, in our game, right? So our game, it didn't cost the game. We talked about the terrible penalty kick that we got against New England.
If we had missed the penalty kick, then it would have been a totally different situation.
Well,
so the ref had just held off the whistle.
Yeah. What I would have said in the Orlando game, you would have said, all right, the referee didn't make that much difference. But if you noticed, so Almada got a yellow card for time wasting on a corner kick.
5 yellow cards in that game.
Yes. Guzan got a yellow card for, I don't know what he was doing, jarring at the referee, whatever. I don't know if you remember, early in the first half, Wiley got a yellow card. He was tight on this guy, and, he ended up getting, their feet tangled. The guy went down. He got a yellow card for that.
Yeah. It was amateur hour on the
yellow cards. It was amateur hour, even in our game. So if you're only watching our
game. But, that's why I looked. I was like, let me look at the stats. I was kind of surprised Orlando had the possession dominance in the game. But, the fact that we had 5 yellow cards in the game, I was shocked.
Okay, so let's talk about Chicago versus Montreal, okay? Mm-hmm. So there's a shambolic penalty awarded to Chicago after VAR, and there was basically hardly any contact. I mean, he hardly even touched him. The guy who made the foul was like, he thought he had to be someone else. He's like, surely you're not calling a foul on me. Like, I didn't touch him. And he was right. Like, he hardly even touched him. So they got a penalty kick for that. Right, it was a crazy game. Joseph Martinez, by the way, had an absolutely sublime backheel so that Montreal extended the lead to 2 goals.
I saw that.
But then a red card penalty kick for Chicago, which lets them back in the game. I don't know if you saw this, but they're in the box, and basically they're, it's like a corner kick, right, or free kick. I can't remember. It was one of those. But it's free kick. Everybody's in the box. They're juggling, whatever. Yeah. One of the defenders kind of goes like this to get him off him. He doesn't really make a contact. He calls a red card, sends him off penalty kick for an elbow to the face.
Oh, dear.
And you're like, dude, he just shrugged him off.
Yeah. Oh.
Like, you can see that on every free kick and every... I'm like, oh, my God. It was absolutely horrible. And then, just because it's fun, did you see the way that Chicago won the game?
No.
So Chicago is in the 97th, 98th minute. It's tie game.
Yeah.
They're going for it at home, right? So they get the ball around midfield, and the guy just tries to drive a diagonal cross into the box. And he hits it as high and hard as he can. It gets up in the air. Chicago wind kicks in, bends the ball left turn, and sends it right over the goalkeeper for a goal.
No way.
And now the goalkeeper should have gotten back. He was really bad on it. He got a hand to it. He should have saved it. But you're like, what? It took a left turn in midair from half field. You got to go see it. If you haven't seen this, go watch it. Right? Because it is one of the great, crazy goals in history of soccer. And certainly, in my opinion, the craziest goal in MLS history. Okay. Then New York City FC versus Toronto. Right? A red card where... There was a guy went to block a pass, and he went over the ball, and he did actually make contact with his ankle, but he wasn't trying to challenge. He was just trying to block it, and he didn't hit him that hard, and the referee sent him off.
Oh.
Yeah. Red card, because he went over the ball and hit contact. You're like, but he wasn't challenging even.
Got it.
Uh-huh. I'm like, I don't think so. And Seattle versus Colorado, there's a second yellow card for a sliding challenge with very minimal contact.
Yeah.
So it was crazy.
Well, you know, and I thought, I mean, that's going to affect Atlanta United as the card accumulation, you know, happens. So
now I will say there was one red card that was absolutely deserved. St. Louis versus LA Galaxy, right? Tie game late in the game. St. Louis gets a crazy counterattack. He gets in behind and he's going off to goal, right? And the LA Galaxy defender catches up to him and tackles him.
Like straight up football tackle?
Yeah, he football tackled him, got up, and walked off the field even before the...
I love it when people do that. When he's they like, take it just, and they're like...
Just owned it. Yeah, right. He's like, oh, that was clearly last man back. But also in that game, by the way, you should also see, there was a corner kick that was... quarter kick to the far post. It's headed back. And the center back for St. Louis, inside the 6-yard line, bicycle kick, upper 90. So go watch that too. Amazing goal.
Which game is that?
St. Louis against LA Galaxy. Oh. So it was a wild and crazy thing in MLS.
Another game that we were texting about, and Dave was disappointed in me, was okay. the snowball. What was that?
What game was that? First week.
It was the first week. But what was that?
Where was that? Remember? Was it Utah? Was it Utah?
It was LAFC, and it was at Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And who's the coach of Galaxy?
It's Chirundolo.
Yeah, he was saying...
It was that, LAFC.
Yeah, he was saying it was like the worst professional sporting thing I've ever seen. And I have to agree, because, look, at some point it's fun, right?
Yeah.
Like the...
We had one in, like, what was that, Minnesota? Joseph
Martinez. Right. The soccer ball was still rolling. At that point in time,
the soccer ball doesn't need to roll.
It actually has to for it to be a legitimate soccer game.
Where's your sense of adventure, Mikey Dodd?
And my point was like, sure, like in whatever soccer that we ever played, that would have been perfectly acceptable. We all were
I said, who kidnapped the real Mikey Dodds? Because the real Mikey Dodds would be like, play on. But what if these sissies can't play in the snow?
But if you were coaching in that, I mean, wouldn't you agree?
Of course, it was totally shame up. But I would have embraced. Well, the one thing I would have said as a professional coach, you'd be like, look, I'm worried that players are going to get injured. But that being said, if they played the game, I would have just told my players, go enjoy it. Like, pretend like you're 5 years old again. Who cares about the result? If you lose, just blame the snow. Just go have fun.
But I 100% agree. What were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
But. At some point, there's a professional league that's running this and has to not make a very hard decision. I mean, I saw one photo and I was like, that's not playable.
The other thing I might have done, playable. Just for the spirit of pissing off the MLS for making me play in that, I would have said, if there's a free kick, everyone in the wall get a snowball together.
Yeah.
And right as he's about to do it,
right.
The snowball.
That's my point. Like
come on.
Come on. If you're trying to like raise the reputation of this league, like it snows a lot in Europe. Have you ever seen a soccer game in any of the European leagues that look like that? No. And there's a reason. It's called common sense.
I'm with you on that one. And speaking of, I don't know where y'all are going with this, but speaking of bad weather conditions, did y'all see the women's national team game against Canada?
No. Tell us more.
Oh, it was just as poured through the both semifinals. Just absolutely poured.
There was standing water on that field. That was dangerous.
It was not. It was dangerous. They could not. If you kicked the ball on the ground, it was going to stop. You know, I mean, there's no point. So everyone was just kick it the direction in the air, out of bounds, whichever. You couldn't pass back to your keeper. Yep. You couldn't do anything. It was awful. It was awful. Yeah. But it actually turned out to be a decent game, though, because it went to, like, I think Canada tied it up in the 80th and then tied it up again at the last play in overtime, didn't go to PKs. So it was a decent game.
What was the progression of the women's game through the tournament? Because you said they won. And
we had already clinched in the first round. This is now there's a CONCACAF Gold Cup for the women's, which has never been because it was such a joke. They would never have the tournament because the U.S. was so much better.
Right, exactly. Matter.
But now the teams have gotten good enough where they actually have a Gold Cup just like they have for the men's for the women's side. And so we were already through on the group when we played Mexico and Carmen.
And we lost Cero. In dos.
Dos y cero.
Dos y cero. Yeah, but the wrong way. I like it.
I'm doing the other way. But yeah, so that, I don't, God, have we lost, like, had we lost them? Like, it, whatever it was.
In all the tries, I think they said that there was only, there was once. Yeah.
And it was the second time. And it was like. But yeah, it was not pretty. And we're thinking, oh, here we go. But we can't, I still don't think we played well through most of the tournament. But for the most part, I mean, we ended up winning. So, I mean, at the end of the day, we won the title. At the end of the day, that's what you want. But we still don't look America.
Who's our best player right now? Who's playing in form?
I still like Naomi Girma, but Jordan.
Oh, Naomi Girma in the back is legit.
She is best fantastic. Defender in the world.
Terrific.
Absolutely fantastic.
What's her club team?
I know this. She was in California. Was it not San Diego, though? One of those California ones.
Is it San Diego?
Okay, so it is San Diego, though.
That's where Alex Morgan plays, right? Yeah.
Okay. Okay, but she's...
Me. Look at me.
I know, you're awesome. But yeah, she is fantastic. But on the let's score some goals side, finally, Jordan Shaw, who is 19?
Certainly not 20.
She's definitely not 20.
Yeah.
Got the golden boot for the tournament. She was
looks
good.
Legit.
She looks real.
I mean, this is what we're saying. There's always the people are like, oh, we got to keep playing our veterans, blah, blah, blah. There's always the next American women coming through, right? So, you know, just got to find them.
Yeah. Because
I was talking about, you know, if you're the national team coach, right? It's just about, as a U.S. coach, it's about tactics and talent evaluation, right? If you can do those two things, you should win every game because you have access to a talent pool that no country has, period.
Well, especially women's soccer, too. Like, I mean, the amount of young talent probably is at an all-time, like, it's just increasing. Yep. So it's the problem that the U.S. has with our geography, even on the men's and women's side, is, like, to scout all the talent's really difficult to figure out, like, who deserves a chance to even be evaluated, right? So that's one of the one of the challenges with the MLS as a league is, again, the travel to Canada, to the West Coast, East Coast. But that's also the geographic issue that we have with trying to grow the sport and identify talent early on at that kind of 13, 14, or where they kind of like in baseball, right? They already got an eye on that kid somehow, the way they're able to scout it. And I don't know, how is it different in these other sports that they can deal with the geography?
Because I feel like we change every 2 years trying to figure it out. Like, we change our development system. We change, you know, like, we're trying to figure it out. And I don't know why we can't do it like other sports, but.
So the MLS is bowed out of the Open Cup, except for 18.
Can I say one more
teams.
Thing about the women's first before we go on? So Lindsay Horan got into trouble because she said basically that American women soccer fans lack sophistication and they don't understand the tactics of the game. I think she's, you know, I mean, I think she overdid it, whatever. But what I would say is my problem with the women's soccer program traditionally has been that they've had so much talent that the coaches, and this goes not just the national team, but even at the college level, the coaches don't have to be very good tactically. They just have the best, fastest, most athletic, whatever, you know, girls, and they just dominate. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the world comes along and lo and behold, who would it be first? Barcelona actually learns how to play soccer, and they just wipe the doors off of everybody, including the U.S. They've been giving trouble, right? So I think the U.S. has the talent, but they're no longer going to be able to get by on just being faster and stronger and whatever. Yeah. They're going to actually have to play good tactical soccer. So I think the coach is super important, and I think the choice they made of getting Hayes is good.
So was her comment targeting the players or the fans?
Fans.
Okay. Absolutely the fans.
Yeah. She said that when she was playing...
Women fans of soccer don't understand the tactics.
Yeah, she was saying when she played in France, they really understand the tactics on the Washington women's game and understood it and were more sophisticated. Yeah. And
I think she's 1,000% correct.
I think she probably is, too.
No lies told. Should she have said it? Well, probably not, but no lies told.
No, because you can't fix something unless you call an ace an ace.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. The women that like soccer, right? Particularly, like we've talked about this in the side, like it's patriotism. It's one reason I love watching the U.S. women. It's like, and I think that's why they're backing him. And it's not because they're following the game. Like the fact, if you ask anybody who Alex Morgan plays for, arguably the most popular women's player over the last 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For them to say in San Diego, you know, I know that, and I'm like very casual, you know, so
I barely know
more more women need to know that, right? Mm-hmm. Not only do they need to know that, they need to know the tactics. So if you're not watching, then of course you don't know the tactics.
Yeah.
So I think,
well, I watch a lot because my daughter plays soccer. I watch a lot of women's soccer, and I just sometimes scratch my head at some of the coaches.
Yeah.
You're like,
okay.
I mean, you have at the very highest level playing in the top leagues, you know, you'll have situations where like,
the coach will be yelling to the back four that nobody's allowed to go over the half field kind of thing. Mm-mm. I've seen it. Mm-mm. And you're like,
mm-mm. And I mean,
what?
So if you're, and if you're,
or you hear, and you hear fans, not so much coaches, but you hear a lot of the fans and parents. Yeah. Why are you passing the ball backwards? You're supposed to go forwards. Yeah. I mean, come on.
And here's a good thing. If you're like, especially if you're listening to the podcast, you're a woman, like, this is what's cool about it, though. It's like such an opportunity for, and we've talked about it. We actually don't think, you know, a lot of player coaches are good coaches. Like, honestly, sometimes you get some of the best coaches who don't have any sort of high level soccer experience. They're like, they study the game. So there's like this real opportunity for people who care about women's sports to actually figure it out.
I mean, this is always true that the best players often get the coaching spots, you know, uniquely because they have that reputation and they're not the best coaches. And I think this is particularly bad in the US case because many of the best players have been these bigger, faster, stronger players. That's all they know. And you're like, it's not getting it done anymore. You need the tactical coaches, which is one of the reasons, for example, you know, not to talk about other things, but our Paul Riley, who was the most successful women's coach soccer-wise, right, tactically, you know, he came up in a European men's game. He played at Liverpool, right? And I think you take that and you play tactically or whatever, you just show that he could win and win and win. Yeah.
But, I mean, that's just it. It's a numbers game, and math never lies, right? Like, if you have more males that are, like the majority of, like, our friend, like, non-stop soccer over the weekend. We need more women to not watch Real Housewives of Atlanta and start watching soccer games so they can become better coaches. That's just my opinion.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. You're like, Carmen's like, I'm not going to stop doing that. Are you crazy?
You can watch both. I watch both. What do you mean?
No, you can't. There's not enough time.
The NWSL is getting better. They now have actually the second women's soccer specific stadium just opened a few weeks ago in Kansas City. So there are now two soccer stadiums that are women's only in the US, which is
That's big.
Big?
That is very big.
When is Atlanta going to make that happen?
Arthur Blank claims that he wants a team and there should be nothing stopping that.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's a market for it. And that's what I'm getting at. Women out there who are listening, start making a difference cuz I think there's definitely everybody's ready to back it.
But you know, one of the things is
the math has to say it's a good investment.
The math has to match.
They're trying this out, right? So the She Believes Cup, is the tournament to get ready for the Olympics with all of the Olympic teams playing against the U.S. here in the United States, is being played at Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to see what the crowd is. I have tickets. Okay. You have tickets?
I have tickets.
I have tickets.
I don't. Maybe you're guilting me in.
Yeah, now we know.
See, no, actually, this is what I'm saying. No, it doesn't need to be me. It needs to be.
Well, could be you and
It needs to be my wife being like, hey, Mike, let's go to the game. I'd be like, absolutely.
In my head, I feel like they have something planned. Like, they're bringing all the U.S. teams here for, you know, the training grounds.
We now have the new national team training center.
I feel like it's setting us up for, here's our women's national team. Yeah. And the world, everything. Coming to Atlanta, here's our new net. That's my hope. Fingers crossed, people.
I did get tickets to the Copa America.
Copa America.
Panama U.S. game. So I got some.
The prices on that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a season ticket holder. We're all season ticket holders, actually, all three of us. And we got offered, for example, the Argentina game.
I couldn't afford that one.
No.
Yeah. I was like, hard pass.
Yeah.
Hard pass. My God. The tickets were like over $300 a ticket.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, who the hell has that kind of? I mean, maybe if you're out there in the podcast listener saying, oh, yeah, no problem. I got that.
Yeah.
Then you guys hang out with us more often.
The U.S. ones are pricey, but they're reasonable. Like, you know, way less than a Taylor Swift concert.
Yeah, but they're still, even the U.S. is like almost like $200, $150, $180, whatever. I don't know what you paid, but the for a soccer match.
Yeah, it was. I've never been to a U.S. men's national team game, though. And I was
really?
And I was like, they're playing at the Mercedes-Benz.
You got to go.
I got to go,
go. There's some things you pay money for.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Adele concert.
So I spent $180 or something.
I'm going to try to sneak in. I know the porter who works our section. So
okay. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. But it's definitely changed in the sense that it used to be I would never buy tickets to anything. And the reason I didn't originally get United tickets at first, because I was like, I'll be able to sneak in for like $10 at the, you know, because no one's going to go. And then, and I was wrong. Yeah. Very, very wrong. And I love it. I love it. And now that's why you have to get in early, pay the money. And
but you know what hit me was like all the taxes, these ticket sites. I was like, oh, I'm getting, all right, I accepted. But then I was like, all the taxes. And it's like,
we're so old. What? Convenience fees.
Convenience fees. That's just way too much.
It's very inconvenient. Yeah.
Goodness. So you were saying something about MLS, the last part you were saying? Sorry, I interrupted.
MLS pulled out of
The U.S. Open Cup. They're 1 foot out the door, right? So I think eight of the teams, the first...
it's the weird. What?
I have to say, this is not a good solution. Either in or out. Wanted us to be in. You know, I think the U.S.
This is some genius in a conference room, as far as like an owner that doesn't understand anything. He's like, what? Hold on. I got an idea. What if eight teams?
Some of the MLS teams.
Randomly. Like, what? I mean, what?
And some
that?
Of the teams are not even bringing their first team, they're playing their MLS next team.
I mean, I think that's the point. It's eight. Eight first teams, and then the rest are MLS next teams.
This made them. Talking preseason about how I felt like Pineda should prioritize the Open Cup because no one else would, and there's all these other things. There's the Leagues Cup, CONCACAF Champions League. You know, like, for example, if you're Miami, you're not putting anybody, they're not even now going to play in the U.S. Open Cup, but I thought they were. Uh-huh. And I was like, you know, that's our chance to win a trophy. Now it doesn't.
Are we playing Miami at the Benz this year?
Not till almost the very end of the year, October, November, like real late.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But they are coming here. Messi's
will he play?
He's probably going to be injured by then.
And we still have turf, so I'm just kidding.
Didn't the Benz get new turf?
Yeah, they do every year, I think.
No, but I don't think every year. Or maybe they
do. I thought they did every year, but I don't know.
Okay. I think we talked about it all.
Yeah. Once we start talking about the turf replacement.
The blades of grass on the...
Sorry about the knocking out the power earlier,
I was about
folks.
To say, and I think the sound on the YouTube may not have been working throughout, so I'm going to hope Mikey Dobbs can play some magic with our secondary recording and get at least so that you can hear some
of it. So
it never
worked?
I'm wondering if it ever worked, Mikey
Dobbs.
Oh,
my goodness.
But, yeah, so we're hoping we can get something out there for you guys. Yeah. But, and it's my son's birthday. I told him I would say happy birthday.
Is it Troy's birthday or whose birthday?
It is Tyson's birthday.
Happy birthday, Tyson.
Yes, but even though no one can hear us,
just like back in Guadalajara, you say it, I do it, coach.
Football is life. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week. It's Monday. It'll be Friday soon.